Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
We thank you very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio. And it's my honor and pleasure to welcome back to our broadcast series, Dr. Michael Armour of SLDI, Strategic Leadership Development International, and his Leader Perfect Services, which is designed to help companies and individuals achieve peak performance. For decades, Dr. Armour, Dr. Mike as he's called, has compiled an exceptional leadership record in far-ranging fields of endeavor. He is a multidimensional achiever and consistently puts him in demand as an executive coach as a result. And he's also a business advisor, a trainer that is focused on management, leadership, cultural transformation, and startups as well, particularly for entrepreneurs over 50. Dr. Mike is also recognized as a best-selling author in multiple business categories for his leadership and the power of trust, and as a dynamic public speaker as well. It is my pleasure to have an opportunity to chat with him. His roles in leadership are extraordinary. It's included everything such as a Navy captain, a college president, the CEO of an international humanitarian organization, the CIO of a nationwide intelligence community, and more. Also, is embraced by leaders in just about every sector, from government and private enterprise and nonprofit, just to name a few, and by businesses of every size and scope, from startup to the Fortune-ranked household names. We're going to continue our conversation and explore some new approaches and ideas with Dr. Armour today on this episode of Close Up Radio. Dr. Mike, thanks for joining us once again. Always a pleasure to have you on our program and looking forward to the continuation of our series together today.
I am too. It's been a great month and I look forward to wrapping it up on a high note with this program.
I am as well, always learning something and always, opportunities to gauge what we do and how we do it through your expertise and your suggestion and advice. I'd love to delve in and ask this particular question. You know, we've been focusing on the entrepreneurs. Now, from your perspective, Doctor, there are obviously structural and financial barriers which entrepreneurs must overcome at various stages of a building, right? Are there also psychological barriers as well?
As a matter of fact, there are, and some of them are pretty significant. I find that most programs that are designed to help people start a business really focus on some of those financial and structural barriers they're going to encounter. But I rarely hear one of those programs address certain psychological transitions that are necessary. And one of the biggest ones is really closely related to our sense of identity. Most people who start a small business do so because there is some product or some service or some community that they get a lot of fulfillment out of serving. And they look at starting this business so that they can immerse themselves full-time in providing that product, that service, or working with that community. As the business starts to grow, as it becomes successful, as it diversifies, as it broadens its footprint, as it increases its impact, inevitably there comes a place there where the person who has always built his or her identity around providing superior products or superior services has to shift their sense of identity from that to the identity of building a company that delivers those products or services rather than delivering them oneself. And a lot of people find it hard to pull back from that because their fulfillment has always come from being that frontline provider. And now, in order to build the company, they've got to move into a role in which they are managing people who are providing that frontline delivery, but they are not necessarily heavily involved in it themselves. And quite honestly, I've known a number of entrepreneurs who found it almost impossible to make that psychological adjustment. Until it's made, however, you really cap the maximum growth that your company can achieve. A second psychological thing that surprises many people is how much the responsibility for assuring the livelihood of others weighs on you. This was a surprise for me. I grew up in a very poor family. We lived on a subsistence farm. For months on end, everything on our table was either something we had raised or trapped or hunted or fished out of a stream or lake or had traded for with one of the above. And so I grew up in this world where we were improvising continually to get by, but we always did. And so where the next month's livelihood is going to come from has never been an anxiety issue for me. But when I became president of a small liberal arts college that was teetering on the brink of bankruptcy, I found that the weight of knowing that my success in fundraising, our success in recruiting students, our success in managing cash flow was going to determine the level of livelihood that we could provide for our employees. And that was not something that I had really been prepared to deal with. It was a heavy, heavy weight. And it's going to be true of anyone when their company grows enough that they now have several employees who are dependent upon them for salaries and benefits on a routine basis. A third thing, and this is really a big one, and I don't know that I ever have seen it addressed in preparing entrepreneurs for the rigors of building a small business. And for lack of a better phrase, I will call it managing ambiguity. I came to that phrase after a flight to New York a number of years ago when I was seated beside a man who was a serial entrepreneur, primarily in the restaurant arena, had started a number of the nationally recognized name brand restaurant chains. And so as we were flying up beside one another on the plane, I decided to just draw from his experience and expertise. One of the questions I asked him was, what is your greatest challenge today in hiring managers? And his immediate response, without a moment's pause, was finding people who can maintain momentum in the face of ambiguity. And as I thought about that, what an insightful observation it is. After all, we are in a fast-changing world. Our customer bases change, their shopping habits change, the profile of our industry changes. Things are in constant states of flux, and we can't always accurately predict what the next 6 months or the next 2 years are going to look like. That ambiguity becomes paralyzing for some people. People who are really good at making decisions, as long as they have all the data, as long as they can map all the trends, as long as they have a clear sense of where we will be in a few months or a few years, they can make profound decisions. But when faced with tremendous ambiguity in those time frames, they don't have the confidence in their decision-making ability to make a ready decision and then to stick with it once they have made it. So out of a number of things that we could touch on, I'll just limit myself to those three. The sense of identity around building a business that delivers the product rather than being on the front line of delivering it, the weight of responsibility for assuring the livelihood of employees, and the ability to maintain and even build momentum while managing in a state of considerable ambiguity.
Those just joining us, our special guest is Dr. Michael Armour. And as we're wrapping up the month of January and coming to the final program of the month, we are emphasizing the ins and outs of starting your own business, those initial stages of a business, because that's where the largest rate of failure occurs. Dr. Mike, from your experience, what are the things which are most frequently overlooked by entrepreneurs in those earlier stages of starting a business?
Well, in one of our earlier programs in this series, I touched on something I would come back to here because it is so common and it is so consequential, and that is the failure to adequately anticipate what the cash flow demands are going to be in the first 2 to 3 years of operations. I'm amazed at how many people turn to me for coaching to start a business who do not have enough background in even the fundamentals of accounting to understand the difference between turning a profit and having adequate cash flow. They have something of a simplistic mode of thinking that's really left over from the fact that if they've been an employee all their lives and they get a paycheck and then they maintain a budget within that paycheck, income versus expenses is sort of the way they think. But the problem is, in the business world, the timing of cash flow and the timing of orders don't always coincide. I may be taking orders for things that I'm going to deliver but not see complete payment for weeks or months to come. Or maybe people are buying things on installments. So I've incurred the cost of providing that product, but I'm not recovering the cost of having provided it for months. As a result, I don't have the cash to operate on when something unexpected arises. And there's an adage that is very, very wise counsel. It says, always remember that you can operate for months at a loss. You can't operate for a day without cash. And the failure to anticipate what your cash flow needs are going to be and to be certain that you've got the resources and a plan that will assure that cash flow is one of the big oversights. Another is the importance from day one of segregating personal funds from business funds, because most small businesses start off as something of an extension of the personality of the entrepreneur. It's real easy to start paying family bills out of accounts that are associated with the business or paying business obligations out of accounts associated with the family. But at some point, that's going to turn around and bite us. I've worked with companies who had built a very successful track record, were worth considerable amounts of money. They got ready to sell themselves. But when we started doing the due diligence to look at the company through the eyes of someone who might buy it, I would suddenly find that there were all kinds of family obligations that were being paid out of the company. In one case, a daughter's college education was being paid for out of company funds. In other cases, family automobiles or family vacation homes are being paid for out of company funds. Well, anyone who's going to buy the company is going to immediately start discounting the price they're ready to offer for it to offset those places where what's in the cash flow can't really be accurately estimated because there's a commingling of personal and personal and business expenses. Another major one is taking time to define your target buyer as specifically as possible. All of us who start a business are inclined to believe that everybody would like to take advantage of what it is I offer. But the fact of the matter is there's a small percentage of the population who are really prime candidates to buy what we have. How specifically can I define who that person is? And closely related to that, how well have I constructed a marketing message and process to reach that person? It's interesting to me that Many companies, especially those that step into a niche where they generate a lot of business almost immediately, the owners become so preoccupied with delivering reactively to the business that's coming in the door that they never really formulate a marketing plan. And I've got a classic example of it I'm working with right now. A group of women, each of whom had been specialists in marketing, some in companies and institutions, some as private consultants, decided that they would form a partnership and pool their creativity and their energies so they could serve a much larger clientele. And they happened to do it at an ideal time in a niche market that was begging for the service they provided. And all of a sudden, right out of the chute, they had business just coming in the door. And then things changed. The economy changed, some things in the community changed, and all of a sudden those people were not just pouring through the door. And at that point, these people who were consultants on marketing came to realize that they had never developed their own marketing plan. They had not done for themselves what they insisted that their clients do for themselves. So marketing and developing a good, solid marketing plan with a well-defined target customer and a process that will connect with that targeted customer is one of those things that is easily overlooked but can be very costly in the long run.
Sage advice, absolutely, Doctor. Thank you very much for sharing that. Can you also offer maybe some examples of how you've actually helped these businesses navigate the vital transitions and the development of their business?
A lot of the times that I'm asked to help businesses in a challenging transition is when they are either getting ready to sell or they are getting ready to acquire another company, or they are getting ready to diversify their geographical footprint. And though I've helped businesses in all kinds of stages of development, those are some of the things that I have found particularly interesting and often challenging. For instance, I had a husband and wife who had built up a very successful chain of stores selling cell phones. And they had started off with one store. It was bought by Sprint. They became part of the Sprint world, and they then added four more stores, all in a fairly compact geographic area, drawing workers from the same basic community. And so it was simple for them to manage five stores, and the two of them loved working together. And what they liked about this business was that they could work together constantly, not have great drives or be having to work at great distances from one another, and still have a very productive and profitable business. Then suddenly Sprint decided that they did not want to work with people who owned fewer than 10 stores. I think that went to 20 fairly quickly. And so they were faced with the issue of, if we were to have 10 stores, could we maintain our lifestyle of working together and enjoying that close association we have because of the way we have built the business thus far? And so I began to work with them through that. Would they start acquiring stores that people were having to sell because they couldn't meet the new minimums? Or would they become one of those who sold to someone trying to meet the minimums? And as we worked through it, they finally decided the lifestyle issue was more important to them than the additional profit they would pick up by opening more stores. And so we then began to position their business so that it would be an attractive buy, and they were very successful at that. Another company that I helped position itself to sell was a company whose founder was a good friend of mine. He had built up a financial services company that had four branches in the Dallas area, and he began to look at wanting to have an exit plan that he could count on. He had brought in two partners whom he had worked with in the banking world for years, and he gave them an equity position with the idea that through sweat equity they would gain a larger and larger percentage of ownership until they were at a point where they could buy him out. But as I looked at his exit plan and looked at what they were wanting from the company long term, I realized that the plan was terribly flawed. And so I explained that to him. Once he saw the flaw, we just scrapped that plan, and instead we went to a plan in which we would diversify the footprint of the company throughout the region and create an attractive buy for a company that wanted a financial services firm like theirs but didn't want to build one. So over the next 5 years, we diversified to 16 branches and 85 frontline service providers across a pretty broad region, and then began to entertain offers and found finally an acquiring company that he felt good about taking over the workers and the operations that he had designed and honoring the culture that he had carefully crafted over the years. So there's another one. Another one I'm working with off and on right now is a father-son team that developed a very special online product that helps people in a specific county appeal their property tax appraisals in a very professional way that has an unbelievable success rate. And they figured out how to do this in one county, going directly into the county's databases and drawing out information and packaging it in a way that it gives the ordinary citizen, without a whole lot of skill at this, everything they need, and even the forms completed and the packaging put together for them, that they can go in and easily present their appeal. And then their goal is eventually to be stateside. So one county after another each year, adding another county or two, we've been expanding their footprint across the region. So these kinds of opportunities to grow the business or to capitalize on the growth it's had by selling it at a good price are some of the places that I've been, I think, especially helpful to young and emerging young and developed companies.
Have you ever advised people to consider purchasing a franchise as a startup strategy? And if so, what are some of the advantages of actually buying a franchise?
Well, the real advantage of buying a franchise is that it shortens your learning curve. Because if it's a good franchisor, they're going to give you training and manuals that teach you how to do everything you need to know in order to make that building, that business a success. After all, it's in their vested interest that you and other franchisees succeed, because that's going to impact their reputation. So one of the real advantages is if you don't know a lot about business but really want to get into one, the franchising approach is often the way to go, because it provides so much assistance. Sometimes it even provides funding. I helped my nephew get into a franchise a number of years ago, and the franchise fee was rather reasonable, about $35,000, and they loaned him 80% of the money to purchase the franchise. And he then paid them back out of the earnings as the franchise matured. So these franchisers can sometimes be very, very helpful to someone who's just putting their foot in the water for the first time with building a business.
Are there disadvantages to franchise ownership? And if there are, tell us about some of the pitfalls that you've seen owners really should watch out for.
Well, one of the things that I would always say is be very thorough in your evaluation of the franchise. Is it financially, the franchisor, is the franchisor financially healthy? I mean, if the franchisor goes out of business and they're providing your, let's say you've got a restaurant, they're providing your food, they're providing a lot of services you depend on, and then they go out of business, you're stuck. And that happens with more frequency than you might believe. What if the franchisor does not carefully regulate where franchises can be bought? One of the problems that Subway is facing right now, even though it's a huge brand, is that they do not require new stores to be at a set distance from other stores. And so a number of franchisees have found themselves trying to build a Subway business with other Subway stores within just a matter of blocks of them, and they never can generate enough walk-in traffic to make it a success. So look at how the franchisor positions people when they give them a franchise. Do they give you an exclusive area, and how far is that exclusive area from other exclusive areas? And just how solid is the franchisor in terms of their own financial well-being and health? Those things are going to have a big determination in the success you're going to have as a franchisee.
In your judgment, Dr. Mike, what's the most important mindset that someone should take into, you know, the enterprise of starting their own business?
The thing we've been talking about this entire month is how much change and innovation is part of running a business today. And so if I had to pick just one quality that someone really needs, it's the readiness to be a perpetual learner. You're going to have to be learning continually, learning new ways to market your product, new ways to develop it, new ways to economize, new ways to innovate, new ways to connect with a population around you that's forever changing, neighborhoods shifting in their demographics. Business today is a learning enterprise, and people who are not willing to spend the time going to conferences, studying independently, reading widely, following the trade journals, networking with others in their industry, people who are unwilling to be perpetual learners are going to easily find themselves outflanked in today's market and losing their competitive edge. Now, there are other attributes that owners need, but overall, if you are committed to continually learning, you can learn the other things you need to have at your disposal in terms of talents and capabilities. But if you're not committed to learning, you're going to be at a disadvantage all the way through the experience of ownership.
Dr. Mike, if folks want to make contact with you, website, things of that nature, what's the best way they can do that?
Well, there are a couple of websites I would refer them to. My leaderperfect.com website offers a description of what I call my comprehensive leadership development programs, and that includes executive coaching and mentoring, consulting, training, facilitating strategic planning, all the things that go into developing your leadership, including team building. LeaderPerfect.com focuses on that and lays out the LeaderPerfect resources that I make available. I have a new site called MichaelArmor.com that is really targeted at people who are looking for a keynote speaker or for a high-end executive coach to work with their very top leadership team in a coaching role or with their company in the delivery of a keynote. And for those who are interested in startups, I've got a website called Startups Done Right, startupsdoneright.com, that I'm still actually bringing up. It is an expansion of a page that is up called startupsafter50.com, which was targeted at older entrepreneurs who are first-time business owners. But Startups Done Right is going to be apropos for people at any age who want to start a business. And I'm currently in the process of converting it to full functionality. Right now, it basically duplicates a lot of the things on Startups over 50, but within another couple of weeks, it'll have its own unique character.
Dr. Mike, always a pleasure having you as a guest on our show. Very insightful and thought-provoking and topical and relevant information that's so helpful for our listeners. Appreciate the time and looking forward to kicking off February of 2023 together with a whole slew of phenomenal episodes and more great information that you'll be sharing with us in that vein. Thanks for joining us today on Close Up Radio. A pleasure.
My joy.
You take care and be well. Our very special guest, Dr. Michael Armour, joining us here as we continue our exclusive series of episodes on Close Up Radio. For everybody here, this is Jim Masters thanking you for your time this time till next time and inviting you to stay right there. I'll be back momentarily with another incredible guest as well, featured here exclusively on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a great day and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television, Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.